Session number 12951, Reel 2.
I think it was the Air Transport Auxiliary, and I saw him once after the war, but that was all. But whether he was LMF, I don't know.
What made you suspect that it might be?
Because he'd had such a dicey do, as far as his flying was concerned, and he was taken off flying.
But was there
anything? We never really knew anything about it.
Was there anything visible from the point of view of him being shaky?
No.
Was there a kind of regimental pride that you get in the army with regard to 82 Squadron, or was it a pride just regarding being in the RAF itself?
I think that most people were jolly glad to be with Sam Elworthy. And the fact that there was 82 Squadron was a sort of side issue. No, we thought it was a jolly good squadron, but because it was him, I suppose.
So you spent part of your time at Watton and part of your time at Lossiemouth?
Well, we were on detachment to Lossiemouth. It was only a fortnight. Each squadron in two group went up to Lossiemouth for a fortnight's detachment to fly against Norway and then came back to Watton.
What was the purpose of that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose they hadn't got enough squadrons to fly to keep one stationed at Lossiemouth.
Where is Watton?
Norfolk. 20 miles west-southwest of Norwich, I think, roughly.
Did you have much spare time whilst you were stationed there?
Yes. Well, we had a stand-down, as they called it, every... I suppose it must have happened about once a fortnight. And we used to hire a bus and go to Norwich. And everybody seemed to go to... There was a big... I think it was a swimming bath originally, but it became a dance hall called the Samson and Hercules. And it seemed to be the unofficial headquarters or meeting place for all two group. Because... after you're in an operational training unit, you were passed to different squadrons, but you always seem to meet up with the folk who you were training with at the Samson and the Hercules, and that's news about other crews travel around that way.
Did the local people make much of the RAF in the area, or...? Where you mostly ignored.
We used to spend in the evenings, often we used to go into Watton and go and have a meal at the Crown. And we met lots of people there and they chatted. I don't think it was any... I mean, we'd see the same people and pass the time of day sort of thing.
Any other incidents that happened to you on operations in... 82 Squadron at Watton? What about this picture you've got of the attack on Rotterdam? Do you remember that one?
Well, no, that was 21 Squadron, actually. That was another, our sister squadron. But those were the sort of aircraft, those were the sort of operations we were doing, flying low level. Oh, another memorable trip was... I don't know how to pronounce the name place, but IJmuiden. Anyway, it's on the Dutch coast. And three aircraft, we went in low level. There's a harbour there. We flew between the arms of the mole, I suppose it is, the piers that came out. And there were guns on cranes. And we flew in low level, and they fired at us from above. And we had to bomb the steelworks, and we saw them, and we flew inland after bombing the steelworks a little way so that we could turn around to come out. And all the Dutch people were standing in the streets waving to us. We could see them quite easily. And strangely enough, I now know a lady who's married to a friend of mine, who is a Dutch girl, and she was in the in Holland at the time of the war, of course, and she said that she used to come out and wave to the aircraft as they went over.
So ill feelings?
No. I was amazed, because actually she and her husband were over here just last month, and they were looking at my logbook, and he said, "Gosh, you know, you went there, did you?" And I said to Elsa, the lady concerned, "You know, did you think we were dreadful coming?" "Oh, no," she said, "we were always very jolly pleased to see the Blenheims coming over, because we knew they weren't bombing us, they were bombing the Germans." And I thought that was pretty good. That was another memorable trip, I suppose, was when the CO led a trip to Borkum. There were nine aircraft, and Sam Elworthy was leading with Tallis on his right, and we were on his left, and we just went low level into the harbour at Borkum and shot up everything we could see and dropped our bombs and came back. On the way back, one of the aircraft flown by a new pilot was fired at by fighters, and his starboard engine packed up, and we saw the propeller come off and go down into the sea, and so he was flying on one engine, and Sam Elworthy stayed with him and told Ted Inman to lead the rest of the squadron back home, and the damaged aircraft got back with Sam Elworthy all right. But I mean, on that trip, there were nine aircraft on the Borkum trip, and there were about six doing different other trips, and two of them didn't come back, and one of them was on his first op. A chap named Irving was the pilot, a chap named Gadsby was the observer, whom I'd known at bombing and gunnery school, and they came in the morning, were detailed off to go to somewhere in Holland in the afternoon, and that was the last we saw them. It was their first op, which was jolly rough luck. But, you know, that's the Borkum trip. I can't think there were any others that were memorable in those daylights. We finished up in England by doing low-level night ops. We were the only night flying crew on the squadron by then, because everybody else had either been posted back to OTU for rests or gone for Burton. And we went on a night flying, low-level night flying trip to Bremerhaven all by ourselves. We thought it was a bit rough, one Blenheim going all that way. They said, "Get the Europa." And when we got there, after having an awful job trying to get into Bremerhaven, we found the Europa wasn't there.
What was the Europa?
The ship. You know, the Bremen and the Europa were the two German big liners that went across the Atlantic. And they said, "Get the Europa." And it wasn't there, so I just dropped the bombs among the docks, and we got flacked, and we came home. But the following morning, I think a PRU aircraft flew over and confirmed the fact that the Europa wasn't there. And that was our... I'm not sure whether that was our last... We did a daylight down to La Rochelle. The squadron flew down to St. Evel on a Friday, 12 aircraft. We were briefed to fly off the following morning to La Rochelle. We were told that between the island and the mainland there would be two ships for every aircraft we could bomb. There were so many ships there. At midnight, the first bombs dropped on St. Evel, and we were all in one hut. The following morning we came out, the aerodrome had been bombed thoroughly, and seven of our Blenheims had been damaged. Because of the sort of target we'd been told to get, we had hoped that our own Blenheim had been damaged, but it wasn't. And so five Blenheims took off from St. Evel to fly to La Rochelle. One aircraft turned back on the way, so that left four of us. And we went in, we flew south of the island, off the French coast, flew back northwards to get these so-called 24 ships, and it was low tide and there were no ships there at all. So we came back all the way with our bombs on. And the CO was Wing Commander King by then, who'd just taken over. And he led us straight back through the Plymouth balloon barrage. And we landed at St. Evel. And there were only about four aircraft that were able to fly back to Watton because all the others had been damaged in this air raid.
He took you through the balloon barrage?
Yes.
Without collision?
Without collision, yes. I mean, it was obviously there was space, but we were almost at the same height as the balloons.
Now, in May 1941, the squadron removed to the Mediterranean. Can you tell me about that move, please?
Well, yes. If I go back a little bit, we were taken off ops before that because we'd done well over 30. And the CO, Wing Commander King, led a trip to Saint-Nazaire, but he crash-landed at Saint-Marin aerodrome instead of Saint-Evel, damaged the aircraft. So we were sent down. He went for a Burton on that trip. He didn't come back. We were sent down to fly to Saint-Evel, and I got into a van taken to Saint-Marin to take the crystals out from the radio set, because I think they were secret or something. And I took them out, and then we flew back to Watton, or Bodney, and the flight commander was a chap named Squadron Leader Watson, and he said, "You're going to Malta on Sunday." And we said, "We can't, you know, we do for our rest." "Never mind, you're going to Malta." And that was that. It was a one flight, six aircraft to go to Malta. We flew down to Portreath on a Sunday afternoon to fly to Gibraltar on the following day. Took off on the Monday morning to fly to Gib. We were halfway across the channel and we saw an air radar seaplane, which our chaps fired at, but stayed away a little bit. But I said, we were not leading, the squadron leader was leading the formation, but we were the most experienced, I suppose, on the squadron. And I said, "That seaplane is going to radio that there are flight of Blenheims going out, and I bet they're going to intercept us." So we did a what's called a 60-degree alteration of course, and then 120 degrees back again, which delays the intercepting point. And sure enough, I flashed on the Aldous to the observer of Squadron Leader Watson's aircraft, alter course 60 degrees, and they did, and we all did. And lo and behold, we saw about a dozen ME-110s flying across our fronts. But they didn't see us because we were right down on the deck, luckily, because otherwise they would have shot the whole lot of us down, I should think. And we landed at Gibraltar with no bother at all.
Whereabouts in Malta?
No, in Gibraltar we landed.
In Gibraltar?
On the aerodrome there. Well, when we went into Gibraltar, we had a magnificent view of the Ark Royal. I think it was the Ark Royal. Another aircraft carrier and a battleship steaming out through the straits, all with their attendant destroyers. It was a beautiful day, and we were pooping off our very cartridges as fast as we could because they might have thought it was a perfect interception. They were going off into the Atlantic somewhere. And we went into, we landed at Gib on the Monday afternoon. Tuesday, one of the aircraft was unserviceable. So we had the day off on the rock and went round, walked round. On the Wednesday morning, we took off for Malta. And we were somewhere along the North African coast when one of the aircraft went into the sea. Wilbur Wrightson was the pilot. I mean, we don't know what happened. We flew, turned round and flew back to see if we could see anything, but there was no sign of anything at all. It was my our gunner who said, Wilbur's gone in the sea. Not sure whether his name was Wilbur, but he was always called Wilbur. Anyway, we went on, and we were nearing Cape Bon, and Ted said, how are we doing for fuel? Because we had overload tanks on a Blenheim. We were carrying a corporal fitter who was hand pumping the fuel from the overload tanks into the main tanks. And we realised we wouldn't have enough petrol to do the courses we were told to do to get to Malta. So Ted said, what are we going to do? I said, well, we better go straight across. He said, what's in the way? And I said, Pantelleria. But we just went straight across to Malta. We saw some Ju-52s coming out of North Africa, crossing our bows, but we didn't take any notice of them and they didn't take any notice of us. And we landed at Malta. In the middle of an air raid, went straight into the shelters, and that was that. We were bombed in Malta, and we went down the shelters quite often. We did two trips that were not worth doing because we didn't see anything. And then on the 27th of May, they'd spotted a convoy coming south from Naples to Tripoli, and they said, you know, you go and get that. But they said, don't attack if the aircraft, if the convoy is in line astern, because there were destroyers alongside, escorting it, I suppose. And I spotted that these ships were in line astern, and I said to Ted, you know, we shouldn't attack this. But he said, well, Watson's going in, so we'll have to. And we went in, and I dropped my bombs, and that was the last I remembered. And I must have blown up. The aircraft must have blown up. I must have gone into the sea because my watch was rusty. And I came to. I was lying, as I now know, on the deck of a ship. And it was raining, but I was passed out again immediately afterwards. And I was taken, I woke up again momentarily in a hospital, which I now know, of course, was Tripoli. And an orderly came over and put something on my head. And I went out again. And gradually, I got, you know, regained consciousness 2 or 3 days later, and I found I was a POW.
Did the enemy tell you what had happened?
No. No, I discovered afterwards, at least, this is all a bit conjectural, because I met in prison hospital later on a Hurricane pilot who had landed at Malta just after our episode, and he'd been told that 82 Squadron had been wiped out. The Blenheims had gone after a ship, had bombed it, and it had blown up and taken aircraft with it. Well, I have my feelings that can't be quite right, because I don't think they would have picked me out of the sea if we'd blown up the ship. So I reckon that the bombs hit the ship, or hit something, and exploded straight away instead of the 11-second delay, which they should have had, and blew us up, because they took our aircraft and the one behind us with it. in the same explosion. And my crew, of course, were killed. And the whole of the crew behind us were killed. And I wasn't strapped in. I can only assume that I went, the nose blew off, and I was in it, and must have been saved. I'd love to know what really happened, but I don't.
It's just a missing few days in your life.
It is.
How were you treated in Tripoli?
Well, I suppose I have to say that it wasn't dreadful. Medically, it wasn't very satisfactory because they had no or very little anaesthetics. And they were, I suppose they were kind in their way, but they took my leg off a month after I'd been captured. But there was a Red Cross nurse in Tripoli, Lina Bertolotti, and she was wonderful. I don't know why, but she looked after me. She used to come in on her days off. She stole food for me. I don't know whether you know, but the Red Cross nurses in Italy were a very superior social strata. They were, I don't think they were paid, they were volunteers. And they were all aristocratic families. And Lena came from a very well-to-do family in Milan. She showed me photographs of her family, and they were very aristocratic. In fact, in 1966, we went out to see her. We'd corresponded ever since the war. And she taught me Italian, because we spoke in French when I was captured, because nobody could speak English. There were only two other POWs in the ward, and they were both Australian. They didn't speak anything except Australian. There was nobody could speak English. And so Lena and I mean, my French was just schoolboy French, but she was pretty good. And she said, after a while, she said, well, not everybody in Italy can speak French. You will have to learn Italian. And she bought an exercise book and wrote out all the verbs and the words and taught me as much Italian as I... Well, I can't remember an awful lot of it now, but... I mean, it was useful.
Were there any other British personnel in the hospital?
Not until quite some time afterwards, when 110 Squadron came out on Blenheims, and they all got shot down in Tripoli in July. And the gunner and the observer of one of them was brought into the hospital, and the gunner was kept there for quite some time because he was wounded. The observer wasn't wounded, so he was sent off to camp somewhere. And then a Wellington was shot down later on, and the wireless op was brought in. He lost a leg too. And then when they started pushing up the desert in October, November 1941, we had more, the soldiers came. We didn't have any army people there at all then, before that, except these Australians.
Did the other Allied patients get favourable treatment from the Red Cross nurses too?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. I don't think they got quite the same amount of treatment as I got.
But did they get better treatment than the Italians and Germans?
I would say yes. They were quite kind, really. I mean, we participated in the... because every Saints Day there were extra food, and we participated in that. And I remember an Italian being treated on the operating table in the Sala Medicazioni, which was a sort of room in which people got treated, treatment room, I suppose. I was on one bench and he was on the other, and I was had to have my leg broken again, which they did rather brutally. But this poor chap was having something done with his innards, and he was having an awful time. So I think, you know, we did get treated reasonably well. That was in Tripoli. But of course, when we got to Italy, it was a different story, because we were sent to Caserta near Naples. We were in huts there, and the treatment was minimal. But we did get Red Cross parcels in Caserta, which we hadn't had in Tripoli.
Why should there have been a difference between Italy and Tripoli?
I suppose the personnel were different, I don't know. Perhaps the Italian in Tripoli were a sort of more nearer the front line than the people back home.
Why should the Allied personnel have got better treatment than their own people?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't tell you that. I must... all I can say is that when Lena went back to Italy, I didn't get the same sort of personal attention that she'd given to me. But I think it was because, see, I was only 20. They thought, probably, poor boy, you know, and felt sorry for me. I can only think that.
But presumably everybody was young.
Yeah, they weren't as young, quite as young as I was, I don't think. And they weren't as badly wounded.
Did they take your leg off without anaesthetic?
Oh, no, that had anaesthetic. But the dressings afterwards, which were dreadfully painful, I believe that normally they would give you an anaesthetic over here, but they didn't then.
Why did they break your leg?
It wasn't set properly. This was... The ankle was... The foot was dropped. I mean, it went down. It was broken round here, and they didn't treat it. And they had to break it to get it back up again. So it... It suffered, rather.
They did it brutally, you say?
Yes. Mm. On a box. Bonk, you know. On the edge of a box, sort of pushed it. And they reset it. But they gave me an anaesthetic to push the ankle back. But, I mean, my foot, which was shortened considerably as a result of it, because all the bones inside the foot were all mangled. And whereas I used to take a size 10 shoe, I now take a size 7, or thereabouts.
So you lost your left leg?
No, right leg was taken off, and the left leg was badly damaged.
So were they short of all medical equipment?
I think they were, yes.
Were there any other injuries apart from to your legs?
Yes, I had my right elbow.
Other injuries apart from to your legs?
Yes, I had my right elbow was sliced. Had a chip off that. My back had a couple of holes in it. And my left hand was badly cut. The only bit of me that wasn't really damaged one way or another was my face and chest. Otherwise, there were bits of metal and all sorts of stuff.